On today's episode, I sit down with Grayson, the Professor Boucher. He talks about his testimony and how he went from being a traveling basketball TV star to a now viral YouTube sensation, all without compromising his beliefs. He is the definition of never giving up. Check it out. Hey guys, welcome to the Rebecca Weiss podcast. And I'm super excited today because we are joined with the professor, aka Grayson Boucher. He is here. Grayson, tell us about yourself.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Let me put out the official title.
Sure.
Social media influencer and global basketball entertainer based in LA. I was just going to have you intro yourself. And I'm like, wait a second, I got to throw the title out there. So Grayson, tell us about yourself.
So it all goes back to when I was 2 years old. I started playing basketball. My dad's passion for the game wore off on me. And I realized I wanted to play basketball for a living when I was in third grade.
Wow.
Yeah, so I've been playing the game for a long time. For those that don't know, my content is primarily basketball, street ball style of content. So it's basketball, but it's not the NBA. I've been playing the game my whole life and been fortunate enough to be an influencer and do this thing for about 15 years now.
Yeah.
But it started young. You know, I knew I wanted to play basketball for a living while I was in third grade.
That's impressive. You know, not many people can have a career just based off of social media, and doing this for 15 years, that's really saying something.
Yeah, it's been a blessing. You know, I think I was touring actually up until 2016. So I started playing pro at 18, street ball. It was called the And-One Mixtape Tour. It was like on ESPN. It was airing more than the NBA at a certain point for like 5 or 6 years.
Oh, wow.
And it was really great. But company just got bought out one time. Mm-hmm. So the same day I was on the cover of Sports Illustrated, the same exact day, somebody from corporate told us that the company had just been bought out.
As
I'm looking at the cover of the Sports Illustrated, same moment, it was the pinnacle of the whole thing. And at 23 or 24 years old, I don't really know what that meant. So I was like, oh, we still get the hoop? And they're like, oh yeah. I was like, all right, cool. So sounds good. But then like nothing was ever the same since that moment. And then, you know, I started with And-One in 03 when I was 18. It ended in 2008. Our endorsement deals ended. And so there was that stretch, 6 seasons on ESPN. And then it just like ended out of nowhere. And we had to figure out what was next. But digital was next for me, but it wasn't until some years later.
Yeah. So I want to get back into your past.
Sure.
So you said you started playing at two?
2 years old. My dad got me a Larry Bird Nerf hoop. And I would entertain the family, like making baskets on this Nerf hoop. So like being an entertainer through basketball is like in me since I was like two. Like this was the gift and the calling for me. So it was great. And then by about third grade, I wanted to make the NBA or play ball for a living. And I had just like the most unconventional route to playing professional basketball you could think of.
Share that with us.
So my thing was, I never got quite the opportunity because I always looked way younger than I was. So even when I was like 16, 17 years old, I looked like I was 8 years old.
Yeah.
When I was a freshman in high school on the roster, I was 4'11", 85 pounds.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It's like, wait, what?
Yeah.
People are like literally a grade schooler. You know, that's what I looked like when I was a freshman. So
that'd be rough.
It was. And I was a starter on a freshman team. I played on all the AAU teams leading up to that. But then when I got into high school, it was like harder to get an opportunity. Even though I had the skills on offense, defense was a little different because I was so small and I kind of like shied away from contact.
Mm-hmm.
And basketball is like a very high contact sport, contrary to what some people might think.
Yeah.
So come junior year, I got cut from the varsity team. And that's like a big hit to my ego. My identity was just ball. Ball is life, right? That was my thing. So I got held back in a JV team. Still did good on JV, but, you know, didn't get that opportunity of varsity. And then my parents transferred me to a Christian school my senior year, majority just for basketball. So I got a great opportunity. I got second team All-State, one vote away from MVP, and it was great. So I thought I was going to get a bunch of college offers and letters, right?
Uh-huh.
But I got zero. And so...
Oh, no.
But, you know, my ecosystem was small coming up. You know, a lot of hoopers, they don't know what that looks like to play. But like, how good do you actually have to be to play college basketball? It's kind of a mystery, you know, if you're not getting high-level info, you know what I mean? So I got no offers. And I went and tried out for 3 community colleges around the state, and I got cut from them all. Even though I'd have amazing showings, you know, but I still look like I was in grade school and like 18 years old.
What were your specs then? How tall?
Probably 5'6", 5'7", about 115 pounds, something like that.
And so what position were you?
Point guard. That's the only option, right? Being small. So point guard. But I think even though like one of the colleges, I remember I like made every shot, like 7 threes. We won every game, crossing people up, you know, doing my thing. Mm-hmm. But the coaches were real like alpha, and they play a different style of basketball in Oregon. It was more like old school, like Hoosiers conventional. Mm-hmm. For b-ball people, they know what I mean. It was like kind of like the way white people played. It's a little bit dated, but it can be to the advantage of teams that don't have as many athletes. So that's how I played in Oregon. So like my style was more like the NBA or like street ball, but it didn't really fit the mold. So ultimately, my dad, who owned a jewelry store, he was selling jewelry to the local community college, the place I didn't really want to go to because I wanted to move out from my parents. He persuaded that coach to give me a shot to play on the team. And the guy was nice enough to actually give me a tryout. Like while he's selling him jewelry, like persuading him.
Go dad.
I know. So my dad is the only reason I got in the door to play college ball. They were going to have me redshirt my first year because I was so small. Hey, this guy got to put on some muscle. But then 3 of the guards got injured before the season. So I had to end up suiting up.
Wow.
I suited up and I played 3 minutes a game. And if the game is close, I don't even go in the game. So that was my college basketball experience. But during this time, I was like an and-one fan. I'm like culturing and-one. Like to school, I wear, you know, now it's common to wear basketball clothes to school, like for streetwear. Yeah. I feel like I was the first one. I feel one of the first people to do that. Like I would just wear a Nike hoop outfit to school or like button-up pants and a t-shirt.
Yeah.
So I was culturing, but it was all and-one. Like even my senior high school, if you look at my mix, I'm wearing and-one sneakers.
Really?
Yeah. So I go to try out. So and-one mixtape tour was like this global street ball tour. It blew up on these like cult, these VHS tapes. They're called the and-one mixtapes. Mm-hmm. And they had like a global cult following. So huge fan of this just as much as I was the NBA. And I went to, they were going on tour, but before their arena game, they have a tryout in the parking lot for locals. And from that tryout, they only pick like one or two people to come inside the building that night and play against Team and-one. So I went and just tried out as a fan. I was just going to a game as a fan to watch my idols play. But I stepped in and tried out just because they were having a tryout. It like went crazy. Crowd started going crazy every time I get these highlights, crossing people up, getting buckets. And they asked me to come inside the building and play. And so next thing I know, I'm going back and forth with my idol. That's crazy. Yeah, in this battle. And then after that game, they're like, we want you to come on tour with us. They picked me out of like 3 guys. Like, we want you. And I didn't even know what they were talking about. I'm like, You're like me? I didn't even know there was a I didn't even know what they were doing, right? I wasn't aware of the TV show. They probably told me, but I'm so green, I'm not fully registering. So there's even a clip of me on the TV show. They're like, we pick you. And I'm like, okay. I don't even know what I'm saying. Like, for sure.
Yeah.
I don't even know what
they're like, sign me up.
Yeah, I don't even know what
I'm So you went into it not even realizing that you were going to get picked.
No. I was going there strictly as a fan. They had the tryouts the year before. I actually tried out, but like it just ended there. They didn't have a reality show that they were like documenting on the show. So I ended up going, they mimic Survivor. This is one of the first 50 reality TV shows ever. So like they copy Survivor. And so basically there was 3 spots on the tour as a contestant. Uh-huh. And every city, if somebody tried out, the best player who played in that city would replace whoever played the worst out of the 3 guys.
Oh my goodness.
You go home. So every game is called an elimination game.
Wait, so you were up against it every single time? Every city?
Every like 2 or 3 games, they have an elimination game.
Oh no, and you survived?
I survived.
That's a big deal.
The whole summer. So it comes down to the very end of the summer.
Oh my God, I'd be nervous.
Yeah, you know, We had a game that came down at the end of the summer at Madison Square Garden. And so before these arena games, I would get a little bit of jitters and kind of nervous. But I know it was my gift because as soon as the jump ball went up and I ran up and down a couple times, I would always like not be nervous. Like it didn't matter. We were in Madison Square Garden or in the park or wherever. So we come down to this last game and I end up hitting a buzzer shot and we beat Team and-one and they were like undefeated until this year.
What? That's wild.
Yeah. And then the next game, the final game for the reality show and everything, I still didn't think there was no way I was winning. These 2 other dudes were like phenoms that I was like competing against. They could like do a 360 windmill between legs, like best athletes, some of the best athletes I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And so we played a game in Linden, New Jersey. Street ball is from the hood, you know, like Rucker Park is like the mecca of street ball. Mm-hmm. Traditionally, it got so big, they played in NBA arenas. But for the show, they're like, all right, you did it on a commercial. Now, can you do it in the hood? And so the final game we played in the hood. And that was new for me, right? But I happened to have a great game. And then that's how I won my contract with
NY. Wow.
Yeah.
So I feel like what's really important about your story is you didn't give up. Because you had setbacks and you could have just taken that, you know, feedback from people. Oh, you're too small. You're never going to play. You could have taken your college experience and been like, I barely got to play, but you never gave up. And I think one of the things that should be highlighted is you practiced really hard.
Yeah.
And see, that says something though, because you had a gift, but you also had discipline. And that's an important word, because if you gave up and if you weren't disciplined, you wouldn't be sitting in this position today. You wouldn't be where you're at.
No. And I think what I tell hoopers today is, I did it just out of the love and the passion for the game, more so than having the blueprint of how to be a pro or whatever.
Yeah.
That's all I knew, is like my fun outlet. Mm-hmm. Like, so I tell people, like, having a love for the game, a passion, and like imagination is actually more important. Even though knowledge is important, it's actually more important just to love it, because you're gonna be able to put the time in necessary, especially for somebody like myself, who's like majority of people, you're not gonna be 6'8", you know what I'm saying? 6'8", buff. To be able to, you know, make the league just off genetics. Yeah. And even then, those people still got to put in the work too. But especially most of us who are not going to be that athletically gifted. So it was really because I just loved the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you were consistent too.
But it's a God-given passion though. You know what I mean? I think, and I don't think everybody stumbles onto that, right? Because like, I think we can fall myth to like, whatever you love most is your calling. And it's not always the case, right? Mm-hmm. But mine happened to be what I love most was my calling, at least while I can still be active in basketball.
Yeah, and I wanted to transition to that. So what was God for you growing up? Mm-hmm. And then I want you to share your testimony.
Yeah, so for me, my parents put me in Christian preschool. Both of my parents' parents were Christian.
Okay.
So they put me in a Christian preschool. And so I heard about Christ at a very young age. But, you know, when you're young, I don't know, it was like Santa, the tooth fairy, Jesus, all like this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then like,
I didn't like fully register.
No, not even when I was a senior, they put me in another Christian school my senior year. So it was like preschool and it's like the beginning of school.
And the end.
And the end. Christian high school. So I remember being reminded of all the things I would hear. Cause like we had a chapel just like in preschool. I had a chapel, preschool and kindergarten. I had a chapel. So we do that, you know, at Christian school. Mm-hmm. So I was being reminded of all the same things. I remember I actually asked my high school teammate in Bible class. I remember this vividly. I was like, so it's like, is Jesus like real? You know what I'm saying? I looked at him and he was like, wait, what? And I was like, yeah, is Jesus real? He's like, I think so. Yeah, I think so. And like, it was funny because he was Christian, right? He came from Christian. He probably understood it, but maybe he was embarrassed to be like, for sure or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, when you're young. So that's the most I ever thought into it.
So you never really got the full gospel just laid out?
No, I did, but you know, when you're thinking about girls and basketball, like
it's not really the horizon.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't think I fully was engaged. Even though I heard it, I was like, oh, maybe it's like a belief. Like they just want to believe it. It's like good lifestyle or something. You know what I mean? A lot of people think that, right? Just culturally. Mm-hmm. So that's how I looked at it. And then later, as I went through AN1, you know, it just ended out of nowhere. And like me and my teammates, well, I can't speak for them, but I know for myself, most of us probably went broke. You know what I mean? Like I know I did. And so, I think that was necessary because our life was so fast paced and getting so much money and A-list level fame. And we were on ESPN like 50 times a week. That'd be like being on Netflix on the ranked every week.
On the top 10.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Ranked. So to hear from God, I think like I needed that humble moment, that
most of
ego
us do.
Striking moment.
Yeah.
And then ironically, I actually came to Christ because my closest friend, his name is Escalade. He played on the tour with me. He was 6'9", 500 pounds. He actually had a heart attack and he died, and I received Christ at his funeral. Yeah. So very unlikely situation. Yeah.
What was that moment for you? Like, what do you think? Do you think it was just not anticipating your friend going and kind of like eternity coming into your view screen?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't think I ever really asked, Like if I thought about like big questions of life, they were like ultra inquisitive. And I think in my mind, I would think like you couldn't really know concrete truth, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's no way to know. So like, who cares? Mm-hmm. That was kind of my mindset, I think. And then, yeah, I started asking myself bigger questions of life, like after going broke and trying to figure things out, and then like tragedy, and God was working on me. Also, I was playing in a church league at the church. This church that was close to my house, I was playing in this league, and then like the elder or the leader of the team, you know, it's an outreach league, right? So he invited us to church, but I just went to be polite. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I was like, all right, yes. You know what I'm saying? So I'll just go and like listen. It's kind of reminded me of high school a little bit. Wasn't fully engaged, but kind of been asking myself some bigger questions. So it did interest me more than like when I was in high school or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then there was a bunch of things leading up to that moment where God was kind of like leading me. And then like that funeral, I didn't even have like ultra knowledge of the scripture or anything, but I just felt like it was the right thing to do. And then I was really locked in by the time I went back to church and had a full transformation, stuff like that.
Talk about that. Mm-hmm. So you get saved at the funeral and then you get plugged in at a church afterwards?
Yeah, exactly. And I kind of already was, right? Through the basketball.
Oh, so it was the ministry. Same church?
Same church.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it just happened to be like 15 minutes from where I live. So I started hanging out with like just majority of people that the church, you know, it switched up my whole friend circle. I think it was really important, but it was just kind of like obvious that that was the move. Like the one side of friends are partying in Hollywood, partying Monday, Wednesday, Friday, you know?
Yeah.
And then my other friends are like locked in as believers. It just felt like a more pure circle. And I had a way better frame of mind hanging out with them. So that was my mindset at the time, but that was like not knowing. It's like we're supposed to do. So
yeah,
made some good choices in that area. And then, I was in a Bible study and just locked in and just time for a new season of life at that time. Yeah.
Yeah. And did you learn like through the church how to have your own personal relationship with the Lord?
Yeah, for sure. And I think like even after coming back from the funeral, I was digging in right away. Like I talked to
you had like a hunger. And
Kadoodle led my Bible study. He was actually like my mentor. I just made him my mentor. Like after that, you know, like ask him a lot of questions.
Yeah.
Even my friends I was hanging around, they were encouraging us. So yeah, I think like the community helped me a lot, right? Like who I was spending time with and who I was asking questions with, and then being more engaged when I go to church, trying to learn everything I can on the internet, credible sources,
yeah,
stuff like that. So yeah.
And I think that's such an important word, is that we do become like the people we are around, and we have to be mindful about who we choose to hang out with. And, you know, you really were set up in that moment, God, and that's what he does. He pursues all of us, and he knows that perfect moment when we're going to be the most able to receive the gospel and make that decision. You know, same exact thing for me. God had been working on me, mm-hmm, and in the right place at the right time, you know, revealed himself to me, and I made that decision. And you have to make those conscious choices, because when you first get saved, I think you're in a very vulnerable place. I think it's easy to slip back into the ways of the world. And so you have to be conscious about who you're around, how you're spending your time.
Yeah. And I think even forever, right? It's still,
yeah,
it's still
forever.
Easy. Because even like for me, like now I'm in this season where I'm trying to do more of these, be more intentional with doing like ministry events. Like I hadn't done one ministry event since COVID. And I used to do like at least 5 a year or something like that, you know, just use my platform for God like directly. Yeah. And then even now, like I'm still trying to, like you can get in, I get seasons where I get spread too thin and I burn out. Mm-hmm. So now I'm trying to like get back to managing my time healthy and being more intentional about reading the word. And so it's easy to stray away just in general, especially when you're first coming. I know what you meant by that, but like,
no,
forever.
That's a good word too, though. Yeah. It's consistent.
Yeah.
You have to be, and you know, thank goodness that if we get somewhat off track, we can repent and turn back and get back on track. Yeah. If we get busy, we learn to move at his pace. And you know, some seasons are busier than others. And so that's where we have to be led by the Spirit and understand, okay, this is what this season looks like. This is what this other season looks like. And speaking of changing seasons, so and one ends, they get bought out.
Yeah.
You get saved.
Yeah.
When does your own platform come in?
Yeah. So even before I got saved, I think our endorsement deals ended the end of 2008. Like we didn't even get a call. You know what I'm saying? The contract ran out. It was like a dial tone, like, hello? Like, you can't get a hold of nobody.
Rough.
So 2009, I started my YouTube channel, but it was actually an attempt just to get bookings because I was aware of YouTube. I was up on YouTube back in 05. I had a homie make me an edit because fans were ripping our highlights off ESPN. You know, people who are ultra techie at that time. And they're making their own highlight compilations on YouTube. And they're like going off. We're talking every vid's 5 mil, 2 mil, 10 mil. So I was like, I should make these on my own to try to flood YouTube and hopefully to get more bookings or awareness, just period. It's good for marketing.
Exactly.
But then after AN1 ends, I'm like, I need these bookings. So in that time, you actually were able to get a DM on YouTube.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I found a fan who was making professor compilations of some of my teammates, right? And I hit him up. He lived in San Diego. I could see he was in San Diego. I sent him a DM on YouTube. And I actually asked him to teach me how to edit, to like teach me how to do my own channel.
Yeah.
And through that, it was like learning to edit. So I sat with him like 3 times a week. I'd drive from LA to San Diego.
Wow.
I had nothing else going on.
Yeah.
So he taught me how to edit. And then like 2013, and basically what that meant was every time I did a game, because I'd still get booked for like freelance games, you know, few and far in between. I'm not making much money, trying to figure out what's next. I would do these games, and if I had the footage, if I could get the footage from the event, I ain't even hiring nobody to film it. I'm not knowing how to do it. Mm-hmm. Then I would edit it and put it out. So by 2013, my homie was like, man, he's like, a lot of these videos got hundreds of thousands of views. He's like, look, it's got like 500,000 views. I was like, he's like, you never tried to go viral? And I was like, oh, you mean like a YouTuber? And I'm like, he's like, yeah. And I'm like, but I'm thinking I'm an athlete. I'm not, myself might be on YouTube, but I'm not thinking I'm a YouTuber, not knowing like, no, it don't matter what genre you're in. You can go in just like everybody else. So he came up with this idea to do a superhero prank basketball video, which we didn't even know how genius it was at the time.
Yeah.
Where I would go to the park. We chose Spider-Man because it covered every part of the body, so I wouldn't know who it was. And so I would just like play people as the superhero, sauce them up, you know what I'm saying, do my thing. And then it turned out it was such a great vid. It's cosplay, it's humor, it was prank, sports, jaw drop, like comedy, like everything all in one. And that's how you like really go viral. But it hit all those, checked all those boxes, and it did 6 mil in a week.
Which is crazy.
Literally, I only hooped for 20 minutes, but I didn't miss a shot. All the tricks was like flawless. And then I ended up editing it. I edited it myself for like 3 hours or whatever. By the end of, I think the first day, it was like 2 mil views. Then after a week, 6 mil. And I got 1 million subs on the week.
That's crazy.
So it turned into a business overnight.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So that was like the beginning of, okay, now YouTube itself is a business.
Yeah. And so that was in
2013. But I still was touring up until 2016. There was another company who tried to kind of like do what AN1 did, pick up where they left off. It was called Ball Up. It wasn't successful because for a lot of reasons, but mainly like marketing. Everything was turning into social and they were a little bit behind that wave. We had like a TV show on Fox, but like nobody really watches Fox, especially for reality TV.
No.
But I was still doing YouTube in my off time. And then after 2016, those contracts ran out as well. I was able to just go full time.
Wow. Which is really saying something.
Oh, it was great. Yeah. I couldn't wait for that to end. The touring. I mean, it was great. I still love hooping.
But it's a lot of
to
work.
Do your own, to be your own like CEO, make all your own business moves, decide the creative, market yourself how you want to. Well, you can't beat that. And that's kind of, now that's like the new, you know, everybody knows that now.
You know, now I think, you know, I think the internet was rough back then, but the internet's pretty rough these days.
It's always hard.
Yeah.
Like no matter what platform you do, it's like if you wanted to do it in excellence, like a full-time job, and then, you know, the algorithm changes every 6 months to a year. So you have to pivot.
Yeah.
Stay up with the trends and the edit styles and new platforms. It's a grind.
It's constantly changing.
Yeah.
It's evolving quickly. And you know, people online can be pretty harsh. And I think for people who are in your position, it's a difficult position to be in because I think it's very easy. We're living in cancel culture days.
Yeah.
So how do you have this platform and also be a believer and stay true to your beliefs?
Well, it helped a lot being my own boss. Like just step one was like, okay, now I'm controlling my destiny. Nobody decides what we say or how we get down or what our schedule is. So I think that's great. You know, that's one advantage of like being an influencer. You can do your own thing.
Yeah.
And I think also just, you know, it goes back to still like who you hang around, who do you bring on the road with you? What are your disciplines? So I try my best to like be as disciplined as I can to, you know, stay in the word and, you know, be grounded and then ultimately like use my platform for Christ.
Yeah.
But I think how logistically has a lot to do with who I'm around and what are my disciplines.
Yeah. Share some of those disciplines for, you know, the young believers watching who want to grow in their faith.
Oh, for sure. Like, I think like what was big for me even this year after, you know, COVID finally is like behind us, right? Maybe for a year now, but getting into a small group, you know, so I've even recently myself got back into a small group, trying to read daily, you know, try my best to read daily. You don't always get it 7 days a week, but, that's another discipline. Strengthen prayer life, you know, 'cause it's easy to like pray half-heartedly before a meal or in the morning, night, you know, but trying to be more intentional about having a stronger prayer life.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then you could, of course you could say just being in church on Sundays, you know, make it a staple. You don't miss, 'cause it's easy to miss. And I think even for me, that's actually can be hard too, is like you get so spread thin with, you have a huge platform, all these opportunities, everyone wants you to do everything. Mm-hmm. You could be like, come Sunday morning, you'd be like, man, I'm tired as heck, man.
Yeah.
It's so hard to make it up there, but like being intentional about making it a thing. So those are some of the things that come to mind.
Yeah. You know, it's not the most exciting thing for people to listen to, discipline and spiritual disciplines, but it really is how we walk out our faith and how we stay spiritually strong in Him. And so that's such an important word, you know, to be in the right community, be consistent with being in the Word. You know, I want more people in our generation and under to be in the Word of God and to be gleaning it for themselves, because if they're not gleaning from it, it's going to be easy to be deceived. And we're living in very persuasive and deceptive times where, you know, people are putting out what seems like a Christ-centered gospel, but it's not.
Yeah.
And so many people are falling away unintentionally. You know, the Bible talks about how in the last days there will be a great apostasy in the church, that people will fall away. So it's important to be consistent, you know, to be in the Word, to be around the right people. And I love that you're using your platform to glorify the Lord, because, you know, at the end of the day, it's what we do with the gifts He's given us.
Yeah.
And it's being obedient and it's being good stewards. And, you know, I think your life is a testimony to not giving up, to being disciplined. And, you know, when you were in that crossroads moment, you chose Christ and you've leaned into Him ever since then, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's what's important.
Another thing is important to tack on to what you're saying too, is that kids should know, or new believers, is that that's actually a better life. So if you don't have the discipline, it's harder to follow the call on your life.
Yeah.
It's going to be clouded. It's going to be harder to follow a call, and it's not better. Right. 'Cause I think what the enemy will tell us, or what's easy to fall into from culture, is that those disciplines are like hard. Right. So it's like easier just to chill. You know what I'm saying? Like, but you think that's a better life, because you're like, oh man, you work all hard. That's crazy. Like, it's better just, we can think this in our mind just subconsciously, right? But not knowing if you actually like are, and it's not just the Bible directly, but if you're having fun seeking God and learning about Christ, obviously the Word directly too, but if you're having fun pursuing Christ and doing all these things, then with that follows more peace, better life, be more in your call.
Yeah.
And then it's just overall, it's just like a way better life. But even myself, you know, it's harder to stay with those disciplines to live your best life. 'Cause I think the best life in the culture would be like, get rich or be an entrepreneur and ball out and then put people under you so you can like kick your feet up and chill. It's not even how it works anyway, even if you want to do that. But the real is like, as a new believer, like being in Christ, like that's a way better life. Like that's more like, earlier on the table talk, they were saying like sustainable joy.
Yeah.
It can be great. So I think those disciplines can be looked at as just like hard work, and that like there's no great benefit you could reap from it, but it's like, it's actually, that is a way better way, right?
Yeah.
To live. So,
in the moment, it might be hard, you know, because like you said, it's easier to just think, I'm just going to chill. And I totally get that, because I've been there myself so many times. But you're right. In the long run, you see the fruits of the work. And
even in short term as you go, right?
Yeah.
I can point to like certain videos we've made, and it always comes when I'm like most focused spiritually too. Like,
That's a good one.
We'll do a video, like, it'd be crazy. One time I crossed a dude, I didn't even touch him. He broke his shoulder. Like, but the video looked like it went so like superhero versus villain that people think it was like fake, but it like wasn't. It's like God had His hand Even in, you know, stuff like that. So like ongoing, we could see the harvest of like supernatural things happening just day in and day out too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
One of the things you said that was interesting is you said that a lie that people believe is that living life for themselves is the best life, but the best life really is in Christ. What are some other lies from the enemy that God has revealed to you the truth? What are some of those lies that God showed you, this isn't true, this is what's true, that could, you know, maybe help bring clarity to people who are listening?
So many. I'm trying to think where to go. But sometimes like it could be like a deal you get offered or some big money opportunity. But this, it goes back to that saying, like, not all money is good money or not all opportunities are good ones. So yeah. I think sometimes even good things that could come your way or what seems good probably isn't best for your spiritual life or whatever, whether it's signing that deal for somebody who's a crooked partner or something that's going to derail your schedule to not be, do what you want to do and spread you too thin, or something that may be like a little edgy or dark mixed in with something good. So it looks like it's all good.
Yeah.
There's certain really things that I've come across before that's actually not.
Where there's compromise.
Some you should pass. Yeah, exactly. Somewhere where there's compromise. But even in your regular life, you could date somebody who is kind of like not fully like on board with Christ or has a different view of the gospel, but like maybe they're hot or like really nice to you, so you think they're good. Like, I don't know. There's a lot of weird deception that can come your way that need a, you know, a careful inspection on, might not be best for you spiritually.
Exactly. And so that's a really important word. It's not to compromise.
Yeah.
That's so important. I think that's a word that people really need to hear this day, because I think there is a lot of compromise going on in the long run. I think people will regret compromise, but I think in the beginning, it can look, certain things can look enticing or appealing, but it's not worth it. You know, that verse, it says, Jesus says, what if a man to gain the whole world, but to lose his soul, you know, it's not worth it. And so I just love that. For my final question or thing that I want you to do is for those young people who are listening that, you know, have big dreams and, you know, love the Lord. What is your piece of advice to them? How would you encourage them?
I think we covered a lot here, but I think I would just encourage them to stay on track. And I would say, your friend group is really important. I encourage them to hang out majority with other believers.
Yeah.
You know, as far as like your close friends you talk to week in and week out, yeah, I would say just stay on track with Christ, because it's easy to be taken away, and encourage them to just try different things too. A lot of people haven't found what they think their purpose is in Christ. So I think trying new things is good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Things that aren't compromising or dark or bad or whatever.
Don't be afraid to fail.
Yeah, because a lot of people come to me with, how do I start my YouTube channel? Or how do I find what kind of content's good? And I would say, well, you should start with like, what do you like? Like, what do you like now? You know, maybe there's something there. Try all different kind of videos and see what sticks, you know what I mean? And see what's for you. So I don't think in life and following your calling, trying new things isn't a bad thing too. So
no,
those are just some things that's off my head, but
yeah. And don't be, it's like, I think people are afraid to try new things because I think they're afraid to fail, and it's okay. Like failure, this is one of the things I had to learn later on in life. Cause I was so, I would avoid things cause I didn't want to fail. And I had to learn that failure is not bad. It's how you learn, and it's how you grow, and it's what you do with failure, you know?
Yeah. You want to learn, just start things up and learn it as you go. Cause
exactly.
Exactly. Like the learning process, the failures are the learning process, right? Mm-hmm. Like if we never failed, then like, what, you might learn some things, but it's not going to set in.
Exactly.
So yeah, I think trying new things, don't be worried to fail. I think this generation specifically here is all about the microwave. They want microwave success, right?
Yes.
I know, I meet people who like start their YouTube or do things in short term, and like after just a couple vids, they stop because they're like, oh, it didn't work. It's like,
yeah,
that was a 5-year plan. Yeah. So I think, say, even like finding your calling or, you know, stuff like that, like you got to just like learn as you go and
not give up.
And don't give up. I think that's a big thing I've taken away just from life in general. I could look at that in the spiritual form for myself, like not giving up has been great. And then even just like with basketball or like my career now with social media, like don't just stick with it.
Yeah.
I found sticking with what I love for over 20 years actually super paid off.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of opportunities to give up. Like I tore my Achilles, like all these like crazy, I actually get injured every second now. So a lot of like injuries, or like, I notice everybody my age now, like they're just deciding to end because it's like they have kids and now they feel like it's time for something different or whatever. And I know a lot of people after And One, they just stopped, right? Because they're like, well, that's it. I got my opportunity on TV. My fame wave is over or whatever. So sticking with things is actually key just in anything in life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so good.
Yeah.
Well, I almost called you the professor, but I want to call you Grayson. Grayson, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for sharing with the viewers and just keep going, you know, keep glorifying the Lord through what you do. And we'll be praying for you and, you know, believing the best for you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on. This is awesome.
And thank you for watching the Rebecca Weiss podcast.